Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here with us. You heard it correctly. I am Rick Moore here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Talking with the farmers today, or at least a couple. Coming in this morning from their gig out on the farm. Tell us what they do, why they're here, how hard they work. We also got somebody in here from an organization called Slow Money. Slow Money CVA is the proper name of the business. Is that correct, Michael?
That's correct, Rick. Yeah, thank you.
Slow Money CVA. Michael Riley here. He's one of the co-founders. Slow Money CVA. Slow Money Central Virginia?
That's correct, yeah.
Slow Money CVA. An organization that loans money to farmers, helps farmers in their financial need expand their business. Is that right?
I would say that's correct. Yeah, our mission is to provide financial stewardship to small, mid-scale organic farms in the region. So loaning money is really the crux of what we do.
Well, the farmers get settled in and stretch their muscles from all their hard work. Explain in a little more detail. I mean, that's the one sentence explanation, but explain Slow Money to the people who are listening going, what? You loan money to farmers? A little more detail into what's going on there.
Yeah, there's always much more to the story, right? And so I think really Slow Money is about getting people to think differently about how they can invest some of their finances into something that is so critical to our community, and that is producing nutritious food that's good for our planet. Really, when you think about our food system, the best, most nutritious food and the food that's best for our soil and for the health of our local economy is that which is produced locally and stays here locally. And what we are trying to do is to support those businesses. They are businesses. Most people don't think of them as businesses. They think of farms. Most people don't even really, sadly, know what goes on a farm. We're so disconnected from our food in this modern era of grocery store convenience, and people just are, they're disconnected. And what we want to do is really is make people more aware of how critical it is that we support these local businesses. And right now, there's not a lot of financial support out there for them. Most farms around this area have a lot of difficulty walking into a bank and getting a loan for $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 that is really too small for our big banks these days. Even our community banks have gotten so big that they don't like to talk about small loans too much. And even when they do, you know, they have trouble really understanding the nature of farming. It is a business, but it is a business unlike any other, as these gentlemen can certainly tell you better than I. But the fact of the matter is there's a void in the system for farms, and that's ultimately what we are trying to do, is to fill that void and provide them access to capital that they need to help them in their business any way they can, to help them get to the next level in their business, expand their business, eventually work with newer farmers to catalyze new farms in the area. And that's ultimately all about what we're doing. And Slow Money is a concept that's been around for about 10 years nationwide. It really sort of grew out of the slow food movement, which some people might be more familiar with. And slow food kind of came about in rebellion to fast food. And so you can kind of see all the connections there. And so slow money was sort of a derivation of that. And it was started by a gentleman by the name of Woody Tash, who wrote some books about the topic and then began this institute that's based out in Colorado and has spawned these initiatives around the country over the last 10 years or so. And nothing had really ever gotten going in Virginia. And about a year ago, my partner, Hunter Hopcroft, who lives down in Richmond, he and I got together and said, you know, we really need to have something like this in this area. And so we started something in Central Virginia focusing on the Charlottesville to Richmond corridor, although I would say we are already growing beyond that because the fact of the matter is there's nothing like this in Virginia. And we have some great farms all over this state. And so we're already expanding a bit beyond that. But that's something we could, if need be, get into later on. But for now, our focus starting out over the last year has been this area, farms within sort of Albemarle County, Nelson County, Louisa County. That's been our focus to get going, to get started.
I want to get to the farmers, but real quick, why did you start in the Central Virginia area? Because that is the first area in the state, correct?
Yes. Yeah. We started in the Central Virginia partly because I live in Charlottesville, about 5 minutes from here. But more than that, I think what was important was that we needed to have personal connections to the farmers. And through work I had been doing in local food, I had known quite a few farmers. I'd known Mark for several years. So getting making those personal connections was, I think, really important for us to get started. And that was really part of the reason, other than the fact that we just live here. And again, my partner Hunter down in Richmond, he works for Elwood Thompson's down in Richmond, and they do a lot of work with local farms. He's connected into the community down there, so establishing that network right from the beginning was very important, and that was the crux of why we started in this area.
Okay, again, our guest to speak first today on the show, Michael Riley from Slow Money CVA, that's Slow Money Central Virginia. You can go to the website, by the way, slowmoneycva.org, and read about our topic for the hour. So let's introduce our two farmers who were here. We have Renard Turner from Vanguard Ranch. Good morning, Renard.
Good morning, Rick. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much. And Renard, Vanguard Ranch in Louisa?
That is correct.
And what do you have on the ranch?
We started out raising a number of things many years ago. Started farming full-time in 2006 when I retired from 25 years at the University of Virginia hospital side. We raise currently meat goats. And I'm starting a new business with money that I got from Slow Money, and that's going to be my squabbery. It's almost completed. We'll be moving birds in it, actually, by the end of today.
A squabbery.
We are
a little more explanation. I'm not sure everybody knows what a squabbery is. I read about Vanguard Ranch, so I now know what a squabbery is. But
a squab is a baby pigeon. And pigeons have been consumed and eaten by mankind for centuries. It's a delicacy. And we decided to branch out and expand our farming operation to include all natural and organically grown squab. We'll be producing them for the local market with a focus on the local restaurant business and gourmands who appreciate that type of thing. It's a very special product. It takes quite a bit to actually raise it. Correctly and properly, but that's what a squabbery is.
Okay.
It's a special type of pigeons that you use. It's not the pigeons you see flying around, just to make sure that people understand the difference. We use what's called a utility white kings. Utility pigeons have been around for hundreds of years. Utility white kings in particular were created by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Baker back in around, 1890 in New Jersey. He started combining different breeds of pigeons, which included homing pigeons, a breed called a Maltese, a breed called a Duchesne, or Duchess, some people call them. And he combined them for a few years to create this giant white utility pigeon. These birds weigh about 2 pounds at maturity, which is about pretty fast growing for pigeons. These are not the size of the common pigeons that people generally see. These birds at 30 days are about 16 to 18 ounces when they're processed out. So it's quite a specialty item, and we think it's going to do very well in this area.
And how often, you know, do you select them and try them on your plate to make sure they're ready to go?
Well, it takes them 30 days before they're ready to be processed out. And we just started this out, so ours are down on eggs now, so we're going to be having them as soon as these ones hatch out, and we expand our operation. We're actually breeding our own specialty breeding stock. I may have to combine a few other genetics in there to get exactly the end product that we want. So it's a work in progress, but it's going to be something very special.
Yeah. All right. We also have with us Mark Jones from, is it pronounced Sharondale?
Yes, Sharondale Mushroom Farm.
Sharondale Mushroom Farm. And that's in Sismont?
Yeah, we're in Sismont.
So which is in Albemarle County?
It is eastern Albemarle County, yes.
Tell us about the mushroom farm.
Sure. We grow about 20 different species of mushrooms throughout the year. We grow a diverse range of different mushrooms. We grow mycelium, which is the vegetative part of the fungus, and we're using that in some bird feeding studies to see if we can improve their health and their weight gain. We are looking at using fungi that attack insects for biological control, and asking farmers to keep their eye out for these opportunities, and basically anything to avoid a real job. That's what we do.
Do you grow any cordyceps or red reishi? I'm using that for work now.
Yes, we grow reishi. We have 4 different species of reishi that we grow, and we also grow cordyceps on occasion in the springtime. Right now, I don't have a good strain of that. They're very difficult to hang on to.
Yeah, I have to get you with my boss. And so we know that that Vanguard got their loan for the squabbery. And so, what was your loan for, Mark?
Oh, sure. I had applied for a loan to purchase a couple of pieces of equipment, which including what's called a bag tumbler for our clean room, our lab, and also a bagger so that we can put the growing substrate that we use into bags more readily than scooping it in. And so far in our production, these two tools save us about 20 person hours per week of labor.
Interesting. So, Michael, one of the things that doing my prep for the show, one of the quotes that I found was, farms need nimble and transparent access to capital. What about these two loans falls into that category? Building a building, correct? Creating a building and buying equipment falls into that category of nimble and transparent.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think both of these loans really, I think, emphasized ultimately the connection, the relationship aspect of what it takes to support farms. And it goes back to what I said earlier about the traditional financial system really not being set up to really support what these gentlemen do. We are trying to kind of chart a new type of process for farms that is based, again, on terms that most people don't really understand, whether it's the term squabbery or just terms regarding what's important is soil fertility and beneficial insects that can help protect plants against disease, rotational grazing practices. These are things that are so important to the business of our local farms that might take, again, a typical traditional financial institution forever, if at all, to understand, to get their sort of minds around. And so that's really the nimbleness of it. You know, we, our process is intended to break down those barriers, to reduce the friction that's out there in terms of getting the capital that's needed. And again, for farms, often they can't really wait. They can't really wait, you know, 6 months to, you know, go through the hoops that are necessary, even through our government programs that are out there. Some great government programs. USDA has some wonderful programs to support small farmers, new farmers. We know from talking to farmers that there are quite a few hoops that have to be jumped through to get from A to B. And, you know, if you have a farmer who has like a hoop house, that, you know, let's say, for example, that they're relying on to grow their produce, and, you know, a bad windstorm comes through and blows their hoop house down, you know, they can't wait, you know, 9 months, 6 months, 9 months to rebuild that hoop house. They need to get it back up as soon as they can and get back in business. And so that's really sort of the nimbleness, and sort of, again, the transparency is just, it speaks to more of the relationship aspect of knowing the farmers. And I think that's what we always want to be known for, the relationship aspect of things. I mean, as our organization grows, I can't necessarily be the one going out all over the place meeting with people, but I want to set the tone for what that's about, and getting to know what is important to the farmers, you know, what's meaningful to them, what's going to help them, and to trust them, and to have belief that, you know, they know what they're doing. They know what's best for their farm, for their business. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. You know, that's the risk of farming. It's the risk of any business. But again, for farming, you know, we have to be willing to accept that risk even more so than other businesses, because this is so important. It's so important to our local community. So we really want to establish that relationship based on trust as a two-way street.
So am I understanding, excuse me, that nimble and transparent could also be the speed with which the loan is given, and transparent is understanding the language that the farmers are using, or that whole field of business uses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah, and again, it sort of seems a little bit of a paradox to say we're talking about speed here when our concept is slow money, and not to confuse the two. I think farmers, you know, again, speed can be important, but from the rest of the population, we want to understand that growing food is a slow process. So that's really where, you know, maybe sort of defining those terms.
But here we're comparing it to a bank.
Yeah. Well, we are. Yeah.
I mean, when we're talking about nimble and transparent, in that frame, you're comparing it to the length of time it might take to get a loan from
exactly.
a bank.
Or just tradition, any kind of financing, whether it's, you know, even investment capital or whatever. You know, there's just different language around fast and slow. That we have different definitions of fast that the traditional financial system might feel differently about. I mean, they want to see things done quickly. They want to see results quickly. You know, even for investment capital, they want to get their money back quickly. They want to see returns quickly. And we're saying, no, it's not really that way in food. Your returns are a lot slower. And it's really the food that comes out of the ground. It's the soil, building up soil fertility. It's things that, again, there are sort of just a whole different nomenclature than what that mostly.
Not
is
to take
about.
Money away from Mark or Renard, but why farms? Why not tradespeople? Why not single businesses? Single business people with who are being solo parents. Why farms as compared to loaning money to these other organizations, a tradesman, you know, the single parent who owns a business.
Sure. Those are all certainly critical by all means, and I think there are some quite a few good organizations out there that are supporting those needs in the community. This is a need that was not being served, specifically in regard to supporting our farms in the region. So that what we do certainly is not to diminish anything else that's being done in the community, whether it's supporting, you know, fair housing or you know, you name it, other, you know, critical needs in health and wellness and whatever it might be. So again, when you do something good for the community, that's not to say that something else that's being done is not good either. You do it because you feel there's a need for it, and that's kind of why we're doing what we're doing, and trying to fulfill a void that or sort of fill a void that exists in this specific area.
All right, 20 after the hour, take our first break. Come back. I want to ask the farmers how local food has changed in the last 20 years. Be right back. All right, back in action here with our farmers and Michael Riley from Slow Money CVA. Don't forget, you can go to slowmoneycva.org. You can also find stories on both of our farms today, Vanguard Ranch with Renard Turner and Sharondale Mushroom Farm with Mark Jones. Let's bring our farmers back into action. Gentlemen, how has local food changed in the last 20 plus years? I've heard some interesting comments, but let's hear them from you.
All right, I'll start off. Wow. Been living in the area since 1977, so we're going to talk about the last 20 years. I've seen an increase in the number of people who are interested in consuming organically grown foods, and I think it's very important that we bring this into the discussion. Those of us who farm for a vocation, who are committed to organic and sustainable, are very committed to making life on this planet better for everyone. So we don't just farm to make money. We farm to make a difference. We steward our land to make sure that we leave it better than we found it. We don't use chemicals and pesticides and herbicides on our farms because we want the environment to be cleaner. So our commitment extends far beyond the reach of our arms. Locally, I've seen stores like Whole Foods, which is not far from here. It's doing a tremendous business. You've got Trader Joe's that seems to be doing a pretty good business. There's a lot of people who are interested in buying locally sourced, organically grown foods. And that's the biggest change that I've seen. There wasn't this much around when I was here. There wasn't that much of a market 20 years ago. So the market has increased exponentially, which I think is a good thing. I think this is reflective of people having more general interest in their health, and some people that are more committed to environmental change. So what we're doing is really a revolutionary stance in how we wish to see the world in the future. We want it better for everyone. We want cleaner air, cleaner water, cleaner food, less disease, less illness, healthier people. This is a commitment that's bigger than our person. So we're committed to a much broader level of change. I hope that answers your question.
I love all that. I feel like I want to take a clip of that answer and put that out somewhere. The state needs to take that, or, you know, Whole Foods and Trader Joe's certainly need to take that and put that out there. Mark?
I think it's I just want to follow up on what Michael was talking about. I think it's important slow money and people investing in local food because it helps farmers who are doing good work to increase their resilience in the economy and also on the planet and with our farms. It also provides opportunities for innovation. And I think in Central Virginia, we have some of the most innovative farmers in the country right now working to bring high-quality, nutrient-dense food to the market. And I think I mentioned earlier, and 2003, the year before I moved to Virginia permanently, the Best of Seville said McDonald's was the best restaurant. Well, that has changed quite a bit, and I'm glad that's no longer the case. We have some excellent restaurants. We have fine purveyors of food. They know what to do with high-quality, nutrient-dense food and how to serve that up. I think that's really important. The opportunities for the public to buy this food is important. After all, what is the primary emergent property of agriculture? Of good agriculture should be good health, and that's what we work for. And that's an investment for our community that's worth making.
Michael, your thoughts on this? Does slow money have any play into the Charlottesville city market? Do any of the farms there? Because I feel like to listen to Renard and Mark talk about, or parts of their answer just made the city market pop into my head. And I don't know how that plays into slow money, if at all.
You mean in terms of the support of the city market, or
either way? I mean, whether they support slow money.
Well, I think
slow money supports any of the farms.
It's all part of the ecosystem of what we do. So Mark is a vendor at the city market, four of our other loans, almost all of them are vendors at city market. Free Union Grass Farm, Little Hat Creek, 20 Paces. We've provided them all of them loans, and they all vend at the city market. And so supporting these farms supports the city market, supports, again, the people who shop there. And so it's when you really look at the local food system as a, sort of as in an aggregate. Yeah. I think what we're trying to do is to provide not just that support to the individual farms, but the community of local food community overall. I mean, we're trying to really sort of, to grow the whole pot, if you will. And so, we're really taking the long view that local food is going to be so critical to our, Mark used the term resilience. And resilience is becoming sort of a buzzword these days. And I think rightly so, because we're living in a world that's proving to be very, unresilient or non-resilient, whatever it is. So producing local food is really, some people, unfortunately, there sort of has this sort of bias about it being very, overpriced and only for privileged people who can afford to shop at Whole Foods or down at the city market or whatever. But I think what's changing to your last question, what I see changing is a growing awareness that there really is no such thing as cheap food. We've lived for the last, certainly since I've been alive, with this perception that we have all this cheap food that's so great that we, can get all this cheap food all over the place. That term's a lie. And I think most people are realizing that term's a lie, because cheap food comes out to bite you somewhere else, whether it's in your poor health, the devastation of our environment as a result of toxic chemicals, antibiotics in the livestock, you name it. And so we're recognizing those problems that are really starting to cause some really big headaches for us as a culture. And so it's still not a widespread aware. It's still not the awareness is not widespread as it could be, but it certainly is growing enough that more people are recognizing this to be a serious issue.
So where does slow money loans out, gives out loans?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because you're Aren't you giving the money? Isn't it a 0% loan?
It is. It is. We're a nonprofit, as you've said, and so we, like any nonprofit, we survive based on charitable contributions from individuals. We've had some wonderful support from some local foundations, some grants, and so forth. And so we pool that money into a fund that is a revolving loan fund, and we make these loans, and they are 0% interest. Again, there's people might think 0% is crazy, but there really is nothing crazy about 0%. I mean, loans should be there to support the needs of the person you're giving the loan to. Unfortunately, it's not fair to say that. But the reality is we have a financial system that's based on making money off of lending money to people and investing in the different businesses and everything. And so what we're really trying to say is that the return is really supporting healthy, nutrient-dense food, a food system that's good for our environment, good for the ecology, and good for our local communities. That's really the return. And so 0%, again, is getting back to the earlier question about reducing the friction, reducing the obstacles that are out there. It's really not about that. It's about supporting the farms. And we can do that, again, through this sort of nonprofit mechanism that we have.
I'm curious what makes a nurture capitalist. I read that phrase on the website.
Nurture capital, I think, is a term that is, again, tying into a couple of increasing trends in the financial industry built around this idea of impact investing, or there are different names, conscious capitalism. You hear all these different terms that are out there arising as a result of this desire for people to take their money and put it into something worthwhile rather than just investing for the sake of investing without any awareness as to what's happening with where your money is going. And people are waking up again to this need that is out there to support businesses that are making a positive impact, whether it is renewable energy, affordable housing, or our local food system. Those are really kind of the big three, I think, that seem to kind of pop up in terms of needs that are in the community. And so nurture capital, I think, is sort of a term that sort of fits under that sort of umbrella, and it's about capital that is, again, nurturing us. When you think of the term nurture, nurturing our health, nurturing our soil, nurturing our environment, our ecology, our community. And that's the essence of like what we want people to think about when they consider helping and supporting our cause through a charitable donation.
Again, our guest today, Mark Jones from Sharondale Mushroom Farm in Sismont, Renard Turner, Vanguard Ranch out in Louisa, and Michael Riley. He's one of the co-founders of Slow Money Central Virginia, and they're here today talking about slow money. And craft farming, we had this conversation before we started. Who wants to define craft farming to make sure that we're all on the same page with what this is about? Because this is going to go on the title of today's podcast. So let's make sure that we have this done properly.
I think we should speak about the craft of farming, not necessarily craft farming. We want to differentiate what we do from hobby farming. So we are good at what we do. We are excellent at providing nutrient-dense food. This is our craft, and in that sense, it's craft farming. And I want to just reiterate what Michael was saying. One of the things that you get back with your money is social capital, a feeling and understanding that you are actually promoting something in your community, and that the farmers that benefit from this are going to spend their money in the community. They're going to provide for the community. And I think it's a very important aspect of what slow money does is to give people the opportunity to realize the good work that farmers do, and at the same time gain a social capital as a result of participating, at least financially, in that.
Would someone who's doing this for their household income fall under craft farming? as opposed to someone who's doing this for, I don't want to say fun, but who's doing this for pleasure, as opposed, while the other partner goes to work for their six-figure income?
Well,
because I didn't get that from your
That's more of a
from your original definition.
I think we should get away from the term craft farming. I think what we're talking about are small and mid-sized diversified organic farms. That's
so
what,
help me title the podcast. Slow money. Are we just talking about slow money here? Is that the title of the podcast?
Slow money and the craft of farming. I don't know. I'm just. We'll make it up as we go along.
Good luck with that.
We have until the end of the hour.
I'm going to say this. I think in terms of clarifying this, that you asked the question, Rick, about someone who's working off the farm making six figures and somebody stays home and has basically a hobby farm. We're not talking about hobby farming here. We're talking about people who farm as a vocation, as their principal source of income. Okay. Since 2006, farming has been my income.
Yep.
Okay? So we do this on a very serious nature. We are supporting local, sustainable, organic, small, and medium-sized farms. We are niche agripreneurs. That's who we are. We specialize in doing that which most people don't do. Mushrooms, squabs, meat goats. I started out raising meat goats. A little bit of a story for you. Years ago, I went to a local bank in Louisa County where I live. Colonial Farm Credit, I'll call their name, and I applied for a loan for my goat business. I raise very excellent meat goats, all naturally, free range, and I'm actually very well known for that. I've been featured in many books, and I lecture on meat goats around the country. When I went to the bank, I walked in, and I'm an African American. I sat down, and I talked to this lady who didn't look like me. I presented her with about 10 pages of information about goats. Which, by the way, goats are the most commonly eaten red meat on the planet Earth. For those of you who don't know that, the majority of the world eats goat every day, not beef and chicken. Goats are eaten more than any other form of red meat on the planet Earth on a daily basis. That's a fact. I presented her with information. At the time, I was the national secretary of the American Kiko Goat Association and served on their board of directors. I had the cover of the national publication called the Goat Rancher magazine. So I was highly knowledgeable, and I was sitting on 94 acres and had very good credit at the time. Within less than 48 hours, I got a letter from that bank rejecting my proposal. And she had no time to read or really study the information that I had given her. Her reluctance was the fact that in her world, she didn't know anybody who ate goat. And she says, well, where can you buy this, and who would eat it? Oftentimes, that's the problem that farmers have. Slow money offered an opportunity to me personally because I'm talking about something that's very, very different here. How many people even know? You ask yourself, what's a squabbery? You know, most people don't know that a baby pigeon is called a squab, or that they've been eaten and considered a delicacy for hundreds of years. French cuisine, Moroccan cuisine, North African cuisine, Mediterranean cuisine, gourmand chefs all around the world favor squab. The problem is there's not enough people raising it. So I'm bringing something new to the Charlottesville market. My mission is to provide local, sustainable, organic food within a 100-mile radius of my farm. I'm not interested in serving beyond that because it's not good for the carbon footprint of this planet. Food needs to be local and sustainable. We have to make food more regional. That's the only way you're going to have protected food service, protected food services, and a safe and healthy food for people to eat. You know, that's very important. Where do you have biological control of your food is when you keep it close to you. You know, food that's coming in here from Washington State or Oregon State or Guatemala or Mexico have no control over, you know, the quality of that food. So slow money is a great opportunity for small local farmers to do something different and make a big difference in the world around us.
So I'll throw out a proposed title for you, which of course may have some self-interest in it, but it's really about slow money and the business of the local food shed. And that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about the businesses that serve the local food system and they are businesses, and that it's hard to necessarily define that because some of them can make money strictly from the farm. Some do require some off-farm income. But we're not really talking about somebody, again, that's running a hobby farm or producing food that's going out somewhere else into the industrial food system. There's quite a bit of that around here, too. And again, that's not to take anything away from those people, but that's not what we're looking to do. We're not looking to support monoculture or commodity farming. And that's just, you know, that's just a whole different system.
All right, Dan, can you change that podcast title? All right, I got a thumbs up. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to get Mark Jones telling me about his day on the mushroom farm. Be right back. All right, back on WPVC, Sunday morning wake-up call. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm all caught up on what's going on up on the farm in the morning. Probably up much earlier than, I don't know, I get up about 6:30, but my guess is you've already been up a long time. So tell me about a day on the farm. Sharondale Mushroom Farm, Mark Jones out in Sismont. Sure. What's your day?
My day starts with coffee. And then usually a little bit of paperwork and communications. And then we go out and see what's going on. We do the watering since it's the temperate season. We're growing in the woods and in a hoop house right now, some of the tropical and semi-tropical mushrooms that we grow. And then in the grow house, we usually have an employee or two in there harvesting. I take care of most of the clean room or lab work myself. And that is... at the end of a process of mixing hardwood sawdust and some grain byproducts and then bringing the moisture level to the correct levels, sterilizing with steam and pressure these bags of substrate, and then through the lab we inoculate with the mushroom mycelium, which is a vegetative part of the fungus, and we grow that out. It's called the incubation, and then we're able to fruit that out. We also support other farmers by selling our certified organic bags to them so they can grow mushrooms. In fact, that's kind of our mission, is to get more people growing mushrooms and bringing them to the market. I think it's probably one of the highest quality nutrient dense proteins and mineral sources that we can get. Fungi are pretty amazing in what they do. We usually wind up the day by evaluating what's there, and I review the paperwork and other things that happened, and hopefully we have a little time off and don't have to go back to work after we eat dinner.
And how many different types of mushrooms are you growing now?
Right now we have about 15 species that we are growing. Some are fruiting, some are not quite fruiting yet. But over the course of the year, we grow from 20 to 25 different species. So I enjoy diversity. If I had to grow shiitake mushrooms and harvest those every day, I'd go out of my mind. So diversity is important. Some of the other things that we use fungi for, animal health, soil health, plant health, we're also doing the research along those lines to see how we can use some of our byproducts, how we can use some of the strains of mushrooms that we have in our collection to these ends.
And Mark said that you're at the farmer's market, a city market.
We are at the city market. It's not a farmer's market. It's the city market.
Right, it's the city market. Talk about that. Do you go?
I try to avoid that.
You send others?
I send others to do that. Yes, I have usually have work, clean work on Saturday mornings, and I don't like to get up that early. So, yeah, the market has been pretty good. I think people are responsive. I think there are now four mushroom sellers at the market. So there is some diversity. I think we offer the greatest diversity in terms of species and perhaps quality.
So what got you into the mushroom farm? I mean, why mushrooms?
Sure. Well, I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I took some classes in horticultural therapy, using plants and horticulture as for therapeutic outcomes. And then I studied permaculture, and I thought that was interesting to look at whole systems of farming and how nature does the work. And when I got to Virginia, I realized that not many people were talking about the fungi, which of course are integral to any environment and ecology. And so I became interested, and I'm self-taught over the last 15 years. Although I do have a master's in plant health, I studied a fungal wilt of Tabasco pepper down in Louisiana, and that gave me some of the skills I needed to develop this farm. But basically, I'm self-taught to figure it, and have figured this out over the last 15 years.
The business that I work for is food-oriented, not a restaurant. And occasionally there are other businesses that we have tangent relationships with. And someone put out an article saying negative notes on mushrooms, that mushrooms should be naturally grown, not in the way they're being grown now in the drums, et cetera. I'm curious to your thoughts on that.
Well, I think mushrooms and fungi are very dynamic, and they're dynamic accumulators of heavy metals. They are they certainly break down toxins and other things in the environment. So I think if you're going to eat mushrooms or use them for medicine, you should look for organically grown mushrooms. I think that's really important from a nutritional health standpoint.
Excellent. I like your Sharondale Farm here in Virginia. People should follow that. I'm really excited to have Slow Money and Sharondale and Vanguard here on the show today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, we're glad
to
be here.
Yeah, this is great.
11:47 here. A little bit of time left on the show. Renard, we know why you started, mm-hmm. but I'm curious about your day at the ranch.
Okay, happy to talk about that. I start my day with coffee also. Typically, I'm an early riser. Not necessarily out of necessity, but that's just my lifestyle. I get up by 6 o'clock every morning, and I go into my kitchen, and I make a pot of coffee. I say my morning meditations, looking out my kitchen window. I'm always thankful for another day of life. I can usually see my goats walking around, so my first walkabout in the morning is often with my cup of coffee, is just to check on my goat herd, just to make sure that everybody is walking around normally and everybody's in good condition, and to make sure that the automatic waterers are still working so they're getting fresh water to drink. After that, I'll usually go in and have a breakfast, check my emails, make my messages, answer messages that I have, and then I go out and check my pigeons. I've been a breeder of racing pigeons for over 40 years, so I'm not new to pigeons. So I have other birds besides the white utility kings that I use for squabbing. That's my new pigeon adventure. And I go out and feed my birds, check their waters, make sure they have grain and grit. And after that, I take care of plants because I also grow herbs and vegetables. And that's just, you know, cutting, tilling, planting, drip irrigation, fencing repairs, the usual stuff you do on a farm. Plenty of stuff to do all the time. One of the things that I want to add here that I think is very important is that the passion that we have for what we do is what motivates us in our daily lives. You know, you're not going to find a better quality squab anywhere in America, because not only are my birds all naturally grain fed, I give them a very high quality pigeon grain, all natural grit. Of course, we have fresh farm water. We're in the Green Springs district of Louisa, known for good quality water. And I also raise herbs on the farm, and those will be incorporated into the diets for these pigeons. I think that it's really important to understand the Slow Money gives small farmers options that they didn't necessarily have. Because nobody would really listen to, you know, a black farmer talking about it. They want to start a squabbery. You know, there's no bank that would even think about it. It's a unique situation to be in. We are niche market people. We are agripreneurs. We are committed to what we're doing. And we want to serve this local Charlottesville area and Richmond area. But beyond that, our product really is so fresh that we don't want to push it beyond that. And I'll also say that, you know, as long as I've been here farming, our goat operation is very unique also. So I'm actually starting a new line of goats, a new strain of goats that we're calling the Bangus, which stands for the best all-natural goat in the United States. No chemicals, no additives, no hormones, no shots. We've raised them for 10 generations, goat generations on our farm. They're quite unique. It's based on myotonic goat genetics with a few other additions, but they're very special. As a matter of fact, I've got somebody coming to buy one at 3 o'clock today.
Oh.
So that's how my day goes. There's always something to do on the farm.
Well, and that's something that I forgot to mention, is that growing mushrooms is one thing, but selling them is basically another business. So we, Reynard and I both still have to do sales, and yeah. We are both nationally recognized speakers. We travel and speak about what we do and try to educate other farmers and help them to diversify either into the animals or the fungi.
Right. Trying to, I mean, it's one thing to grow your own business. It seems as though from where we are in the hour, that part of what Slow Money is trying to do and part of what you two as farmers are trying to do is you're not trying to prevent competitors, which other farms, large industrial farms, might be doing, but the small agripreneurs are trying to do is help and teach and bring in other farmers.
Excellent food. That's our passion.
So, yeah. Michael?
Well, I just, in the short time we have, do want to emphasize, too, that, what these gentlemen do and the other farms do is truly amazing. And we have a community here, certainly around Charlottesville and statewide, that is growing in its support of local food. And you go down to the city market and you can kind of see that every Saturday, just the swarms of people. I do get up early and I try to get down to the market and get out of there before it actually even opens because I can't stand the crowd. But it's wonderful to see that support. But what we're trying to emphasize for people is that, you know, there's sometimes only so much you can buy down at the market, particularly if you don't have a big family or whatever. I mean, you know, there's only so much food you can buy to support these gentlemen, right? So what we're trying to say is, okay, if you really want to support the local food system, this is another way you can do it. You might go down and spend, you know, maybe $50 at City Market on a Saturday, but now you can take maybe another $50 or $100 or whatever and support our fund, and that's another way to support the local food system. My goal, my personal ambition for this project, this organization, is to one day get this fund up over $1 million. Which seems like a drop in the bucket when you look at the billions of dollars that is spent on our commodity industrial food system. But just $1 million just in the state of Virginia supporting what these gentlemen do and what other farmers do day in, day out would just go a long way to you know, helping their businesses flourish, helping the food system flourish, getting more farmers to start food businesses. There's just so much that positive that can be done. And it seems like for us a huge number to hit that, but my goodness, it should be so easy when we think about the money that we spend so, you know, carelessly on so many other things in our culture, that to take, you know, some money and devote it back into something that is so critical to our resilience and to our health, collective health, I think, you know, certainly I'm passionate about it, and I hope other people will be too, to see the benefit and the good that can come from this.
Yeah, learn more at slowmoneycva.org.
Yeah, thank you.
We've got about 5 minutes left. I'd like to go through the Slow Money missions, if
sure.
we can.
Yeah.
Says, what would the world be like if we invested 50% of our assets within 50 miles of where we live?
Better.
Absolutely, yeah. And that, these are the principles that came from the Slow Money Institute. Again, that sort of was this national program, and that's one of them. And well, yeah, certainly if we took the money, and this sort of gets back to this concept of fast money that we live in sort of a fast money culture where people put money into, you know, they put their nest egg into a mutual fund or 401k, and that money goes somewhere else. It does not go into their local community at all. Not one penny of it goes into their local community. It all goes somewhere else, somewhere far off, into some place. They don't even know where it's going. They don't know anything about the businesses. In many cases, again, not to take anything away from the individuals working for these businesses, but the fact of the matter is that many businesses are very extractive, whether they're in the petroleum industry or other polluting type of
industrial agriculture.
And that principle really speaks to this idea of taking some of your money. Look, you don't have to take your whole nest egg, but take some of your money and let's put it back into something that's within your community, 50 miles, whatever it is. And I know, I think I probably speak for all of us in saying that the world would definitely be a better place, without a doubt.
What if there were a new generation of companies that gave away 50% of their profits?
That'd be a good thing.
Yeah. I think we're starting to see the rumblings of a lot of that. I guess that could be a whole nother show, right? we get into more social initiatives that I know I feel strongly about, that could make this a better world. We have a huge imbalance in this world between the haves and the have-nots. And there's clearly, I think, some things that can be done to balance that out. And that's, I think, maybe what this kind of speaks to. But yeah, that's a big topic. Certainly, you're starting to see certainly more awareness and discussion of it. The Green New Deal is one that I'm sure has probably been talked about on this radio station at certain times throughout recent months or so. But I think there's a lot to be said for that.
And what if there were 50% more organic matter in our soil 50 years from now?
That's perfect. That's also a step in the right direction. We would love to see that. That's why we do what we do. We are proponents of that, 100%.
We like to say...
Do we want to be here?
We like to say soil is wealth. And if people don't know exactly what that means, I encourage you to to do some reading up on it. Soil is wealth. It's where our wealth really comes from. The more we can protect our soil and gain back what we've already lost, the better off we'll be.
We got 1 minute.
Sure. Support your local farmers and eat more mushrooms.
Yeah. And try some squab and some goat.
How many farms did you make loans to in 2018?
So we're up to our sixth loan. So we've done a half dozen loans here, really, just since the beginning of the year. And again, our goal for this year is to do about a dozen or so loans. And I mentioned earlier that we are expanding around the state. We received a nice contribution down in the Hampton Roads area. And so we'll be doing some work down there. And again, we know there are farms all over the state doing wonderful work. And our ambition, our goal is to be able to support them. So I would say within 5 years, I'm looking at $1 million and working with dozens, if not, you know, hundreds of farms all over the state.
And how does somebody apply?
Oh, it's pretty easy. Just go right to our website. There's just a form you fill out, or they can just call. My contact information's on the website. They can call me first or email me. Again, it's pretty easy. Not a lot of hoops you have to jump through.
All right. Nimble.
Yeah, that's it. That's the word. Operative word for today. I'm not very nimble myself, but hopefully what we're doing is nimble.
All right.
Support Slow Money, folks.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, Rick. Thank you.
Rick. Michael Riley, the co-founder. Renard Turner from Vanguard Ranch.
Thank you, Rick.
Mark Jones from Sharondale Farm.
Thanks.
You can find slowmoneycva.org and read all about it. And you can find stories about Vanguard Ranch and Sharondale Farm on that website. All right, everybody. Next week, we'll be back.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC. We'll be right back.